You're hearing an interview feature from Echoes, the nightly music soundscape heard on stations across the U.S. and online at echoes.org. In the early days of minimalism, composers like Philip Glass were ridiculed as simplistic, repetitious, and primitive. But Philip Glass retorted right back, calling the music from atonal and serial composers of the day creepy.
In 1964, 5, and 6, I certainly looked at the older generations of composers as people. They were my enemies. I had to displace them. Everything they did was wrong. Almost anything I could do would be right as long as it wasn't that.
Philip Glass was part of the minimalist movement, which included both music and visual arts. Along with Steve Reich, Terry Riley, and Lamont Young, their music was characterized by long, repetitive note cycles and an absence of harmony or counterpoint. It was called minimal, though Philip Glass preferred the term reductive.
I meant that the harmonic language was reduced to almost zero. There's no counterpoint, there's no harmony. There's a steady stream of eighth notes in 1 meter, in one tempo all the way through. I call it reductive. That's what people meant when they said minimal. But the trouble with minimal as a label is that my music stopped being reductive in 1974, but the word minimal music has gone on.
In the mid-1960s, Philip Glass worked with Indian sitarist Ravi Shankar, orchestrating the soundtrack to Chappaqua. He cites that as a turning point.
I had the good fortune to meet Ravi Shankar at a very important part of my life. I wrote in the music in the manner of my music teachers. My first real voice came after this period of time I spent with Ravi Shankar and my travels in the East, and I formed an amalgam of maybe ideas about rhythmic structure and my own ideas about pitch structure, and that was the beginning for me. But I would say that prior to that, I had no voice of my own.
Ravi Shankar.
It helped him to think about music differently. That's what he said always. When he got interested also in the rhythmic aspect of our music, you know, variations and complications and the counterpoint that we do through our rhythmic expressions.
These days, Philip Glass has Hollywood film scores, orchestral, and operatic commissions from around the world. But in the 1960s and 70s, he was working odd jobs while trying to get his career together. The story of him driving a cab the day after his Einstein on the Beach premiered at the Metropolitan Opera is legendary. Kurt Mukasey is Glass's longtime engineer, producer, and collaborator. He recalls how Glass recorded his first album in 1969 by clandestinely using a studio at night after driving a taxicab all day.
I was actually working for John Lennon, as a matter of fact. He had a staff of like four or five engineers working for him, and I was a junior engineer on the staff. He used to sweep the floors and curl my cables and all that sort of stuff. And as a matter of fact, what the funny part was is when I started working with Philip, Philip and I used to go into the studio at midnight after everybody had left because I had the keys, and we'd work on the record when no one else was around. For free, of course.
Philip Glass doesn't need to sneak into studios anymore. He owns his own facility in Manhattan. One of his crowning achievements remains his 1976 opera, Einstein on the Beach. It's a sprawling four-hour epic that stands with Terry Riley's In C and Steve Reich's Music for 18 Musicians as a defining work of minimalism. Einstein on the Beach was the beginning of a long operatic career that began very unconventionally, influenced by his theater work with the Mabu Mines.
The kind of theater that I grew up in was what's called a non-narrative theater, or a theater of images. Or it was based on theater work that was largely a group work. We rarely started with a script and then put it on the play, put it on the stage. They almost never told us a story in a normal way. This is a theater which where the starting point could be a movement, a gesture, an image, a title, like Einstein on the Beach. It rarely started from a play.
Philip Glass extended his theater work into films and has scored several movies, including Notes on a Scandal and The Hours. But it's still his trilogy of films with director Godfrey Reggio that stand as iconic works. Koyaanisqatsi in 1982 was followed by Powakatsi and Nakoikatsi. With no dialogue or narration, they were an unprecedented meeting of image and music. Director Godfrey Reggio.
Philip Glass's music is the narration for the film. Music portends a direct communion, a direct communication to the soul of the listener. This is the power of music. So in the form of film that Phil and I do, for lack of a better term, I would call it an experiential form of film, one that can, for some people, offer the possibility of a meaningful experience, with Philip's music as the narration for that meaningful event.
The romantic notion of composers prior to Philip Glass was that their music would be appreciated after they were gone. But Philip Glass was the point man for a generation who believed there could be an audience for contemporary music while the composer was still alive.
I can't deny that that's been part of my aim, is to be seen that way. That this is, I've always wanted to be part of the culture of my time and not of another time, the past or the future.
Philip Glass turns 76 on January 31st. For Echoes, I'm John DiLibretto. I hope you've enjoyed this production of Echoes. To hear more features and music like this, sign up for Echoes Online, our 24-hour on-demand music soundscape service. It's at echoes.org. That's Echoes, echoes.org. This is a production of Echoes, which holds all rights. Duplication, sale, broadcast, or distribution of this production in any fashion is strictly prohibited without the express consent of Echoes.